and friends, come in after a day full of laughter and shared meals, of bike riding in the quad, of which there was much, maybe you noticed, and even tie-dyeing. A day full of learning and laughing, connecting and reconnecting. With gratitude for this full day, come, let us gather for worship.
Our chalice lighting is from Eunice Waite Cobb. She's a 19th century Universalist. I do not ask for this faith because I shrink from paying the great debt of nature, but I ask for it that I may have respect for myself, that I may feel that life is worth living, that good is worth striving for above and beyond its mere return to earth. And above all else, I ask for that faith because it makes life grand and gives to us sublime possibilities. And further, it gives a substance of joy and bliss with which nothing earthly ever gave, and which nothing of earth can take away. Please rise as you're willing and able for the hymn. My life flows on in endless song.
It's only when we have nothing else to hold on to that we're willing to try something very audacious and scary. Only when we're free of all the allure, the enticements, the familiar and comfortable lies of the patriarchy will we be able to alter our perspective enough, change our feelings enough, gather enough courage to see and grab the next rope, and continue our journey home. Sonia Johnson.
So today, who knows the hymn, The Earth, the Fire, the Water, the Air? Yay! So, sorry, I was a little caught off guard yesterday. So could we do it twice through as a whole group and then break into halves again? Great. So do twice through and then you'll lead and you'll follow two more times and we'll call it a night. For that. Sing on Sundays.
So I want to tell a story, but I'm going to need a little help. So Lynn and Dave, where are you? Okay, you have some shakers, and Kristen, great, folks from my congregation. So what I'm going to ask you to do when I tell you is to shake them, okay? Not in unison, just shake them nice and loud, nice and consistent, and do it until I tell you to stop when I do this, okay? Great. Do you want to try? Okay. Perfect. So now I'm actually going to need a lot of help from the rest of you. So when I get to the right part of the story, I'll point to your part, okay? And then you'll do it. And the parts are really simple. So all the folks over here on your right, you are going to rub your thighs, okay, just vigorously. That makes some sound, good. And then, perfect. Okay, and folks on the left, you are going to snap your fingers. Great. Now, all the folks up on the balcony, you're going to stomp your feet, okay? Wow, I was afraid there'd be too many people and they'd bring the house down. Okay. So now later on, when I do this for the whole sanctuary, okay, you're all going to rub your thighs, okay? Got it? Nice. Okay. So let's start. John Murray was born on December 10th, 1741, on a cold and rainy night in Alton, England. He was the oldest of nine children, and his parents were strict Methodists. They and their minister believed that people were born sinful and would have to work their whole lives to overcome their drive toward evil. This scared John because his parents and his minister taught him that most people would go to hell when they died, and that God already knew whether or not John was going to heaven, no matter how good he was. Come on, keep it up. He wasn't very good at resisting temptation, so young John was convinced that he was not going to heaven. But despite his fear, he grew up to be a good church-going man in that cold and often rainy climate. And finally, one day, he became a preacher. Then he met a beautiful young woman named Eliza. Things were looking up. His life became full of hope for the first time. John and Eliza were married in a beautiful ceremony on a sunny day, and a year later, they had a little baby and were very, very very happy. He preached regularly in his Methodist church, and he was respected. Then one day, John was asked by his minister to go visit a woman who had stopped attending their Methodist church. It turned out that she'd met a radical new minister in town, a man named James Relly, who was preaching craziness. James Relly believed that, get this, people are good. He believed that anybody could get into heaven, that all you had to do was be kind and compassionate and treat yourself and others with respect and love. He taught that God loves everyone, no matter what, all across the universe. So James Relly called this nutty idea universalism. Well, the unthinkable happened. After hearing this new teaching, John Murray was converted. He was a universalist. But then things turned bad again. Lynn. When people found out he had embraced this blasphemous idea of universalism, they were not happy. His family stopped talking to him. His friends stopped talking to him. He was thrown out of his church, so he lost his job. Soon he was going broke. His baby died. His wife Eliza died. John Murray was destitute, grieving, depressed. He vowed he would never preach again. So on a cold, wet morning, he boarded a merchant ship and headed for the New World, the land that in a few years would be called the United States of America. It was a rough trip crossing the Atlantic Ocean with lots of wind. And as the ship approached its destination in New York, the rain, which seemed like it hadn't stopped in years, became heavier. And the ship was blown off course all the way to Barnegat Bay in New Jersey. And the storm just beat against the ship, and there was thunder. And the ship was blowing more south and more south. And then finally, in the morning, the rain stopped. And the sun came out. But the ship had run aground on a sandbar off the coast, and there was no more food on board. So John Murray got off the boat, and he walked across the shallow water toward a house at a place called, now you got to wait for it because this is a perfect name, Good Luck Point. And standing on the edge of Good Luck Point was a man named Thomas Potter. And it turned out that Thomas Potter had just built a little meeting house and was waiting for someone to show up, someone who could preach the good news that God loved everyone just the same, that people were born good and free of sin, and that all had the chance to get into heaven. John admitted to Thomas Potter that he had preached, but he had also promised to himself that he would never do it again. Thomas Potter begged him to preach in the empty little meeting house. And then the wind picked up again. Potter begged and pleaded. So John Murray relented and said if the winds didn't die down by Sunday, he would preach that day. So on September 30th, 1770, John Murray preached his first universalist sermon in that little meeting house at Good Luck Point. And when he was done, the winds died down. And John Murray became one of the first fathers or mothers of universalism, which he believed should give people not hell, but hope and courage.
Thank you.
The Tall, Tall Tale of John Murray is one of my favorite stories from our Universalist and UU histories. It's the kind of triumph over the human spirit story that I like to look back on when my own life isn't going so well, or as I hope it would go. I think about the determination of Thomas Potter building that little chapel at Good Luck Point. Think for a minute about him building a chapel and waiting for the right minister to come and preach there. I can think about John Murray leaving behind so much sorrow in England, vowing never to give a sermon again and being invited by the hopeful Tom Potter to preach in his little chapel. Those parts of the stories are all very human, with no hint of anything beyond the realm that our five senses can experience. There is the tactile little chapel built by human hands. There is the ship stuck on the sandbar, running out of supplies. Nothing miraculous required here. And then there's the weather. Now, the weather doesn't require anything miraculous to occur, of course, but sometimes the weather is so strong, powerful, and has such little regard for the plans of we humans that it can seem to have a will and sentience all its own. The story calls to mind for me the unexpected. Yes, the hopeful is there too, but it's the unexpected that makes this one of the founding stories of American Universalism. The story could have ended simply with a man preaching in a Sunday in a little chapel where many had preached before, but none had found the spark of life there. The story could have ended simply with John Murray getting back on the boat and the boat leaving a day early. The story couldn't have happened at all if Thomas Potter hadn't built the chapel. The story wouldn't have mattered to us some 245 years later if it hadn't been for the tragedy suffered by Mr. Murray, the optimism of Mr. Potter, and something as quirky as the weather. I'm not the kind of minister who will stand in a pulpit and say things like, "God works in mysterious ways," because that isn't how my theology works. But this story is almost so good as to tempt me into saying that. What can we say with certainty is that it was human beings and their responses to their longings that brought them together. And perhaps we can even count ourselves a little lucky that the weather cooperated. What I want to ask you this evening is this: how often are you able to look at your life in such a way as to turn an obstacle into a chance to grow? This isn't some mamby-pamby self-help question, but a deeply theological question that I bring to you this evening. How can your own faith help you go around an obstacle, or several of them, to continue going forward? This morning, some of us heard from Reverend Joan Van Ezel the Sufi story of the little stream that wanted to join the waters in the faraway ocean. To do this, it had to change, to reclaim its soul, to go back to its origins, to cross the desert and get to the ocean. The stream had to allow itself to be transformed, to return to a different aspect of its identity so that it could best the obstacle in its way. But to do this, it had to be willing to let go of its hard-won identity, the identity it had been claiming for a long time, so that it could achieve the life goal of joining with the ocean. How does this faith of Unitarian Universalism give you the courage to change so that your path, filled as everyone's is with obstacles, how does Unitarian Universalism give you the strength to transform? Our faith is a journey of transformation. As a minister in this faith, it is not my role nor my desire to tell you what you should become. It is my hope, though, that I will be invited to walk with you in your journey. As a minister in this faith, it is my goal to accept you as you are today, like any other Unitarian Universalist would hope to do. You have your faults and your gifts, and so do they, and so do they, and naturally, I have many myself. It is my great joy to meet people who are as imperfect as I am, and I love to have them tell me about who they are. I'm very happy to meet, experience, and accept you as you are. I believe wholeheartedly in the sentiment expressed by our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But as I'm a minister, I am not happy to leave you where I found you. I want you to grow. I want you to come to church often, and I want you to have a transformative experience or three or a dozen of them there. Dare I even say, I hope that you encounter the holy there. This evening's chalice words were written by Eunice Wade Cobb. I do not ask for this faith because I shrink from paying the great debt of nature, but I ask for it that I may have respect for myself, that I may feel life is worth living, that good is worth striving for above and beyond its mere return of earth. And above all else, I ask for that faith because it makes life grand and gives to us sublime possibilities. We heard the story of John Murray's first Universalist sermon given in the New World, and I want to ask you, what is your story of transformation? Like the stream from the Sufi story this morning, I want to know how willing you are to be changed so that you can get unstuck. Are you here in Unitarian Universalism because it is easy and comfortable? Or, like Eunice Wade Cobb, are you in this faith because it helps you make your life grand and you see the labor of making it grand as your spiritual practice? A friend once answered the question, what do Unitarian Universalists believe in? With the following answer that I'm going to shorten for you. She said, Unitarian Universalists believe in the human endeavor. We may and do believe in the human endeavor, but we know deep in our hearts and our souls that the human endeavor requires our participation. Our historic Universalist roots teach us of a love that is beyond measure. We carry that forward with us to this very day. This love can and will hold us, even when life's circumstances require us to change in order to survive and thrive. Change and transformation can be uncomfortable, scary, and frankly, maybe even a little terrifying. But that is the stuff of life. In life, change is our constant companion. In order for a beautiful bird to become beautiful, it must break out of the shell it is born in. It must leave the safety of all it has ever known to spread its wings to fly. May, when the time comes for you to make your next transition into your next beautiful form, may you have the strength to do so, the wisdom to ask for help as needed, and the deep, deep, soul deep knowledge that there is a love, love enough in our world to hold you while you grow and celebrate your newest form. Amen. Please rise in body and spirit as you're able to sing with us our last hymn, 'Tis a Gift to Be Simple.
I want you to give yourself a little room. Feel free to move into the aisles, come forward, do what you need to do. You may even have to turn your body a little bit. Okay? I want to teach you a prayer that I learned from Reverend Beth Johnson, who serves a Unitarian Universalist church in Vista, California. It's a prayer that I like to do in the morning, facing the sun when it's there. But I especially like to do it facing the sun when I can't see it. It's a reminder that the sun will return. So I'm going to teach you the movements first, myself, and then we'll all do it together, and then we'll do it silently, three times through. Now, I'd like to ask you to do it as slowly or as quickly as you want to. Take your time, and when you're done, just remain standing in the silence. So we're going to take a deep breath. And let it out. Feeling your connection to the great all through your breath. And then we're going to begin in an attitude of prayer, because, of course, we're all seekers. Lift up with your hands out, reaching to that which is beyond the universe, the mystery, the spirit of life. Call it God if you like, and ask for what you need. Praise the universal good. Set an intention for yourself. And then gather all of the gifts that you have been given, the wisdom, the nurture, the comfort, the talents, and hug them into yourself and be thankful. Then, as we do with all gifts, we share them with the universe. So let's practice once more. Deep breath. And let it out. Attitude of prayer. Lift your arms up and out to what is beyond you. Gather in the gifts and hug them to you. And let them go back into the world. Now do this three more times at your own pace. Our words of benediction are adapted from Doreen Valiente. You are the beauty of the green earth, and the white moon among the stars, and the mystery of the waters, and the desire of human hearts. Call unto your soul, arise, for you are the soul of nature who gives life to the universe. From you all things proceed. And unto you, all things must return. May it be so.
Good evening. Well, what I picked out of Reverend Joe's remarks was part about patience with human imperfection, which is probably because the theme of tonight's announcements is going to be rectifying imperfections. A reminder that helmets are mandatory for all bicycle riders on campus, all ages, no exceptions. I'm sure kids just forgot. I'm sure they just forgot. So gently remind them, everybody. It is an Oberlin rule. It is an SI rule. Everybody. And, you know, even if you're on your bike and you're just moving it that way, no, put on your helmet and set a good example. In other self-propelled transportation news, a child's scooter disappeared under mysterious circumstances during move-in. The circumstances make it look like somebody grabbed it for a joyride, so it might be around somewhere. Somebody might have, like, just taken off with it and then abandoned it. It is a pinkish-red Razor scooter with black handles and a rusty back brake. If seen, please contact Colleen Taylor or a member of SIPC. Small conversation groups are what they sound like. They are small groups organized for conversations, organized to meet daily, operating kind of like an adult touch group. Due to a communication error, not everyone got word about the setup meeting for small congregation groups. So we're going to redo that tomorrow. 1:30 in the upper level of the middle room of Stevenson, if you get what I'm saying. You know, the three big rooms and then there's the upper level. Upper level of the middle room of Stevenson, 1:30 tomorrow, organize small conversation groups. If you checked off that you're interested when you registered, you can go. If you just, my scintillating description of it also just made you suddenly interested, feel free. We regret the apparent miscommunication that resulted in this space being double booked for hymn sing this evening. We have what we think is a good makeup time, but we want to make sure that we don't run into the same double booked by another UCC group before we announce it for sure. So watch this space. We will announce the makeup date when it is confirmed. It is not exactly a mistake that the young adults moved Monte Carlo night outside. It was a risk. And if you've looked at the forecast, it is a risk that we're probably going to lose. We had, like, really nasty storm clouds that just blew over us today. They're not forecast to blow over us tomorrow. But we have a rain site, which is Hale's Gym. Hale's Gym is where the youth program is operating in the main. It's actually it's like one of the first Oberlin gyms. It's a really cool space. It's like 100 years old, and it's like this old-time gym. It is, if you head due west from the Science Center, it is across the street and through some parking lots and such, and it's that way. And it's also where the Cat and the Cream, which is the student coffee house where also youth programming happens, is also attached there. So be aware, if it is raining like the forecast says it is supposed to rain, the rain site for Monte Carlo night will be in Hale's Gym. I hope everybody had a great first day of SI. We seem to be underway. We have a few imperfections, but nothing that cannot be rectified with a cup of coffee, a soft serve ice cream cone, and an announcement. Thank you.
Minnesota,